23 minutes to 7. I like this text message. It says, the way the media works today, it's impossible for politicians to be honest. Take Burke on Insiders. He was too frightened to make any statements about Labor policy on the budget. The usual claim that he doesn't know what the numbers will be this far out from the election. John Hewson has been the only honest polly, and he got smashed. And I imagine that that text is riffing on my conversation with Stephen Chiobo just before, where I asked him what his response to the Murray Review might be, or even if he had certain things he was prepared to rule out or rule in, or what his thinking was, and he really wasn't very forthcoming on that. And maybe you're right. Maybe it's because of jerks like me make it impossible for us to have mature conversations about this. Whatever the case, we know that as this political year begins to wind up, the Prime Minister is in a spot of bother. And today it seemed to get even worse. Another bad poll emerged, and he's been trying to play that down all day, while behind the scenes we know that Liberal Party people, even senior ones, are quite worried. He tried to spin it this way. He sees himself in pretty good company.
This is not the first government to have a rough patch in the polls. The Howard government, the Thatcher government, the Reagan government all had rough patches in the polls, and I'm not the first leader to be subject to a bit of speculation, but I think that the public are also focusing on performance, and this is a government which has fundamentally kept faith when it comes to the big commitments we made to the Australian people.
So there were the comparisons. Howard, Thatcher, Reagan, Abbott. Lenore Taylor joins me now, political editor at The Guardian Australia. Lenore, does it stand up?
Well, if we think about what the Prime Minister's trying to tell us with that comparison, they are all leaders who did unpopular things and who crashed through, who prevailed in the end. Mm. So what he's basically telling us is he thinks that he can crash through. And that gels with what he's said, been saying in recent times. He's done a few little things to, you know, he's admitted he told a porky about the ABC, or he's sort of admitted that, and he's said he's going to revise again his paid parental leave scheme, although we don't quite know how. But essentially, on the main budget policies that have caused the government so much trouble, they're going to come back next year and they're going to try again. And it's this sort of crash-through approach. Now, I don't know, I'm not 100% confident that that's going to work, because public trust has been so eroded because of broken promises and because of the widespread belief that these measures are unfair. And I just don't know. I think the government can win the argument and should win the argument that the budget needs repair, that savings need to be made. But I think it's comprehensively lost the argument that this is the only plan to do it, or that this is a good plan to do it. The Prime Minister seems to be suggesting that he can crash through and that his plan will prevail.
Who's his audience here? Are you talking to us as voters? Is he talking to his own party room that seems to be getting jittery in a way I've never seen before? Certainly if you believe press gallery journalists who get backgrounded on all this stuff, it's real. This is actually happening now. Mm. Who's he trying to convince?
Well, I think he's got to convince voters. I mean, the backbench is jittery because the polls are so bad. So at the end of the day, it's the voters that he's got to convince. And it's not working. I see no evidence that this is working.
So what does he do from here? Is it possible that, let's say he goes away over summer, as he suggests, and he's going to think about paid parental leave. And let's say he does something really radical in that. He jettisons it, for example, so that that can no longer be used as the stick to beat the government with that the opposition's been using. Let's say he finally does remove the barnacle of the $7 GP co-payment, which we thought was going to go and apparently isn't. All of that stuff. Can he actually fix this by doing a few mea culpas, getting rid of some of the more unpopular items and then pushing forward?
Well, to start with, he said he's not going to do those two things. What he said on the weekend was he's going to revisit the paid parental leave scheme, pare it back a bit and use that money for childcare. Now, a lot of people would think that that general equation is a good thing, but I was just watching one of the commercial television newses and it had all these parents on it saying they're really angry because they don't know whether they're going to lose their paid parental leave or not. So by announcing a back down without announcing the new policy, there's a whole new lot of uncertainty opened up there. We don't know what the new policy is. And on the co-payment, even though nobody can see how it can get through the Senate, the government seems to be saying that they're going to stick by it. I sort of think the only way they could do it is to really say, look, we need to start this whole budget conversation again. Here's the problem. Here's what needs to be fixed. Let's think about it. But then it leads to conversations about, say, superannuation, which is another major area of potential savings. But that's one promise. Not touching superannuation is one promise the government says it will definitely keep, you know, and that those savings would mainly target higher income earners. So, you know, I think they've got to rethink it and present a bunch of savings that are seen to be fair, but I don't think that's what they're intending to do.
Well, isn't the problem then that they made a whole group of promises that are mutually unrealisable, and so they have to decide which ones to break effectively? Maybe they need to go out and break a big one that hits rich people. Maybe that's the only thing they can ultimately do.
Well, I would argue that's the case, but I don't think that's not what they're saying. That's not the message we're getting from the government.
Is there any possibility really of a leadership change? Just thinking about how much it damaged the Labor Party and, okay, unusual circumstances in the way that Rudd went and then the fact that there was all this undermining that kind of went on. But given it was so central to Labor's woes, could the coalition really countenance that?
Well, even before the case study in what not to do that Labor provided over its two terms, the coalition was historically very reluctant to change leaders. Mm. Now it can also point to how it didn't work when Labor did it. But the backbench is getting kind of panicky. They want to see something give, you know, something has to give. So I would think it was unlikely. But when enough people see polls over a long enough period, and, you know, it would have to go well into next year, that they really fear for their jobs, you know, anything's possible, I suppose.
I've got text messages already saying it should be Julie Bishop. She's very impressive, more statesmanship, and then on and on it goes.
But, I mean, then once we get into that conversation, it becomes almost a self-fulfilling prophecy. And already the coalition is in this mindset where they're leaking against each other, where, you know, there's discussion, you know, Joe Hockey saying that he understands why his colleagues are briefing against him because he says no to their spending requests, and Julie Bishop's, you know, letting everyone know that the first time she asked Tony Abbott whether she could go to the Lima Climate Change Conference, he said no. Mm. And, you know, all these talking about themselves stories are dominating a lot of the media, and that's just going to make the whole situation worse.
And remember, it was Julie Bishop last year who was saying you don't interrupt when your enemy is fighting amongst itself, referring to the then Labor government. Mm-hmm. It seems extraordinary that we're having this conversation in such a young government. I mean, it's barely been around.
Yes, it's extraordinary.
So is there anything, any salvageable element to this? Could the government change course, whether with a new leader or a current leader? Maybe acknowledge, okay, the public's not quite with us on the way we're handling climate change or whatever it might be. And there'll be conservative commentators who completely disagree with that suggestion, but there's polling out today suggesting it. All of that sort of thing. I mean, is there a philosophical dimension to this that can be in any way remedied?
So I think the biggest problem is the lack of trust and the perception of unfairness in the budget. And there would need to be some circuit breaker admission, ditching of a policy that showed that was understood, and some sort of new saving that clearly, you know, targeted high income earners or corporations, or, you know, some way of making it clear that the government didn't intend to put the burden fairly and squarely on the low and middle income earners. Mm. Then there would need to be some sort of symbolic, maybe climate change is the right place to do it, some sort of symbolic change to show that that they're not being governed by ideology, that they really are governing for the centre. But I think the biggest thing they need to do, and it was really interesting, the interview that Mark Texter, the Liberal pollster, did on Late Line last week, where he said the big thing in the electorate is that they don't know where the jobs of the future are going to come from. Mm. They can see the mining investment boom coming off. They have this anxiety that they don't know what the future holds. So it's really a conversation about, okay, the economy is in transition and we have to do these cuts to the budget to sort of help the economy through, but what's next? Where are the new jobs? Where are the new industries? What do we do if we're not, you know, if the mining boom isn't what's carrying us through, what will carry us through? It's that sort of conversation about the future, which the government is really just not having. And I think, I talked to the Ipsos pollster about it as well a few months back, and that seems to be what the electorate really wants to hear.
a narrative, I suppose. 13 minutes to 7. Lenore Taylor is with me, political editor at The Guardian Australia. Now, Lenore, they've kind of found themselves in more trouble today, but this is over an advertising campaign to do with university reforms. In some sense, we always get this kind of fireworks whenever a government tries to roll out an advertising campaign because it's spending taxpayers' money on, you know, advertising that opposition always says is political and so on and so forth. Is this just run-of-the-mill controversy?
Well, I would suggest it's different in that, yes, in the past we've had ad campaigns before legislation has been passed to explain the case for reform, for instance, on the GST, most notably. But this isn't just that. This is an ad campaign once the government failed to make the case for reform. Once the reform was already rejected by the Senate, then they're advertising. Like at the, it's like a total cart before the horse situation. And I think it's really got the potential to annoy people because, you know, voters have made up their minds that they don't like this package of higher education reforms. The Senate made up its mind that it doesn't like this package of higher education reforms. And now we're getting the really expensive ad campaign to try and sort of retrospectively convince us all that it's a good idea. Now, whatever the merits of the argument, I think that sequence of events is sort of almost tailor-made to really piss voters off.
Right, and so the key thing is this can't be considered merely government advertising an information campaign for something that voters need to know because it doesn't exist yet.
Well, like I said at the beginning, it isn't extraordinary to advertise something that hasn't yet been legislated. That has happened before. But it usually happens at the beginning of the process when the government is seeking to build a public case before the government takes it to the parliament. It doesn't usually happen when the government's failed to make the public case and has already had the legislation rejected by the parliament.
The other thing that has really gathered a lot of attention are conservative commentators, and I perhaps use that phrase loosely, but nonetheless, people who have traditionally been supporters of the coalition and particularly of the Abbott government, now starting to jump off. What does this tell us? I mean, is it meaningful? Does it give us a portent of what's coming?
Well, I think it's it's significant in that the government's, you know, in the position of being attacked by traditional foes and traditional friends. It means that that critical message is going out into audiences that are, you know, probably heartland voters. And usually those commentators have got a whole bunch of what they think is helpful advice, but I would argue is pretty unhelpful advice about, you know, who should replace who as treasurer or who should replace who as prime minister, or, which just keeps that whole conversation going. And it's got to be the conversation the government doesn't want to have. And today, even Alan Jones had this extraordinary spray at Environment Minister Greg Hunt. I mean, poor Greg Hunt couldn't get a word in. The opening monologue was 6 minutes, 30 seconds long. It was over a redevelopment plan at a proposal in Tony Abbott's electorate. And Alan Jones actually suggested that, you know, this was a plot by, you know, Labor advisers who Greg Hunt was listening to cause Tony Abbott to lose his own seat and go the same way as John Howard did in Bennelong. Now Tony Abbott's sitting on a 15.3% margin, so one's got to say that's pretty damn unlikely. Yeah. But it was just this incredibly disrespectful, incredibly angry rant at the Environment Minister, who just sort of had to sit there and take it and try and get a word in edgeways to make his case about, you know, why the approval had been given and what, you know, what other things they were waiting to find out. And, you know, that's going straight into that. They're the coalition's people that are listening to that show. Right. You know, that's going straight into heartland. So, no, it can't help.
I wonder, though, if that means votes migrate to Labor or not. I don't know exactly what that means.
I don't know what it means for votes entirely, but it's got a, it lends to this whole atmosphere of chaos, of anger, of disaffection. You know, it just builds that whole picture, whatever it means for a specific vote in a, on a specific day or where it goes, that anger and disaffection, it's got to contribute to.
Well, it's a long time to the next election. I suspect the coalition's banking on that to some extent. It's very rare that we see first-term government, so there's all of that. But the picture that you, and not just you, plenty of people are painting, including within the coalition, is not necessarily a very rosy one.
And the backbench is pretty upset as well. I mean, that's the other part of this. They feel shut out of this process. They feel like they've been going along with the government and being loyal and you know, dutiful and doing, you know, playing their part. And I think there's going to be more breakouts on the backbench as well, because, you know, they're the ones that are going to, a lot of those people are going to, the ones that are looking at the polls and thinking, well, that's my job on the line.
Lenore, it's a joy, perhaps for the last time, a joy. Thank you very much for joining us.
It's been a great pleasure, Waleed.
I appreciate it. Likewise. Lenore Taylor, political editor at The Guardian Australia. Waleed Ali with you for Drive. We're going to talk sport next. It's 8 minutes to 7.